Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Text 22, Canto 7, Chapter 3. Hiranyakashipu's plan to become immortal didn't work. Shri Narada Uvacha Ityukvadi Bhavo Devo Bhakshitan Gampapi Lakai Kamandalo Jale Naukshad Divye Namogaradhasa. Shri Narada Uvacha Ityokvadi Bhavo Devo Bhakshitan Gampipilakai Kamandalo Jale Naukshad Divena Mogaradhasa. Shri Narada Uvacha. Shri Narada Muni said, Iti, thus, Uktva, saying, Adi Bhavaha, Lord Brahma, the original living creature within this universe, Devaha, the principal demigod, Bhakshita Angam, Hiranyakashipu's body, which had been almost completely eaten, Pipilakai, by the ants, Kamandalu, from the special water pot, in the hands of Lord Brahma, Jalena, by water, Aukshat, sprinkled, Divyena, which was spiritual, not ordinary, Amogha, without fail, Radhasa, whose power. Translation, Sri Narada continued after speaking these words to Hiranyakashipu, Lord Brahma, the original being in this universe, who is extremely powerful, sprinkled transcendental, infallible spiritual water from his kamandalu upon Hiranyakashipu's body, which had been eaten away by ants and moths. I didn't know that moths do things like that. Must be some meaning, because he's done this several times, ants and moths. Thus, he enlivened Hiranyakashipu. Purport. Lord Brahma is the first created being within this universe and is empowered by the Supreme Lord to create. Teni Brahma Hridaya Adi Kaviye. The Adi Deva or Adi Kavi, the first living creature, was personally taught by the Supreme Personality of Godhead through the heart. There was no one to teach him. But since the Lord is situated within Brahma's heart, Brahma was educated by the Lord himself. Lord Brahma, being especially empowered, is infallible in doing whatever he wants. This is the meaning of the word amoga, Radhasa. He desired to restore Hiranyakashipu's original body and therefore by sprinkling transcendental water from his water pot, he immediately did so. I'm going to read the next verse in short purport because they're connected. Text 23, translation. As soon as he was sprinkled with water from Lord Brahma's water pot, Hiranyakashipu arose endowed with a full body, with limbs so strong that they could bear the striking of a thunderbolt. Pretty strong. With physical strength and a bodily luster resembling molten gold, he emerged from the anthill, a completely young man, just as fire springs from fuel wood, purport. Hiranyakashipu was revitalized so much so that his body was quite competent to tolerate the striking of thunderbolts. He was now a young man with a strong body and a very beautiful bodily luster resembling molten gold. This is the rejuvenation that took place because of his severe austerity and penance. So now we have two different causes. Lord Brahma and his Omoga Radhasa, and then Hiranyakashipu's severe austerity and penance. This is the rejuvenation that took place because of his severe austerity and penance. So Prabhupada begins the purport by describing Lord Brahma's position, or a little bit of a description of his identity. Firstborn, the original learned personality, and he needed a teacher. By the way, Krishna doesn't need a teacher, but everyone else needs a teacher, so he, because there was no other being, Krishna gave him his teachings, and he gave his teachings from within, described in this purport. And then the Lord gave him the power to create, and with that power to create, he created. So he had these, you know, now mentioned two unique characteristics. He, the original being, well, three, original being, original learned person, and empowered to create. So he was empowered to realize and empowered to create. So especially powerful. Now, Prabhupada goes on to say, being especially empowered, Brahma was infallible, which is the meaning of Amoga Radhasa. So the word for word Amoga in the up above the verse, Amoga is without fail, or in other words, infallible. So I did a little
research
from Folio. It's very helpful. Here are some synonyms that Prabhupada has used in his translation of Bhagavatam. So for the word Amoga, we'll focus on that a bit because Prabhupada does in the purport. So in addition to infallible, here's six others. Spotless, without a tinge of impurity. So that's transcendental. I mean, you know, like Shuddha Sattva as opposed to Sattva. No tinge. Amoga. Then another is nothing lamentable. Again, that's lamentable is a mode of nature. It's the ignorant one. And within that which is Amoga, there's nothing lamentable. With full knowledge is a third. Perfect. These are transcendental terms. Invincible, similar to infallible. That's the position, like a name of Krishna is Achyuta. He's infallible. Yamoga is similar. without fail, cannot fail. So that's the position of the personality of God at Vishnu Tattva. And Brahma's not Vishnu Tattva, usually. Untainted, similar to spotless, without obstruction, like determination that's amoga, infallible, untainted, unobstructed, nothing can stand in its way, like pure devotional service. Nothing can start it, nothing can stop it. So this is a characteristic that's being ascribed to Brahma by Narada. Narada is the son of and the disciple of Lord Brahma, and he's describing him in these terms. Amoga Radhasa, whose power, Radhasa indicates power, this is the last line, and Amoga, infallible power. So, in the purport, Prabhupada explains, he's infallible in his power because the Lord makes him like that. He's invested with the Lord's power. He's a Shaktivesh avatar. So he's empowered by the Supreme Lord. So the Shaktivesh indicates, when it's in the case of a jiva, it's the fullness of the Lord's power is invested in the living entity. That must feel like really heavy. The fullness of the Lord's power invested in a jiva. Whew. Now, we'll go for a moment to... Does anybody from memory know the verse in Brahma Samhita where Lord Brahma is spoken about? Of course, it's Lord Brahma speaking about Lord Brahma, or the post of Lord Brahma. Text 49. I'll begin it and you can say it with me if you know.
Basvanyatangshma sakaleshu najeshu tejaha sviyam kiyat prakariyat tadvitad vadatra brahma.
There he is.
Brahma ya esha jagadanda vidana karta govindamadi purusham tamaham vajami.
Translation. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, from whom the separated subjective portion, Bhakti Siddhanta's language, separated subjective portion. Subjective portion means an expansion. So Prabhupada's simpler language, but subjective portion is like very precise. Separated subjective portion, living entity, Brahma, receives his power for the regulation of the mundane world. From whom? So Govinda gives him the power. And he has the power. So, and that power makes him Amoga Radhasa, whose power is infallible because it's Govinda's power. Just as the sun manifests some portion of his own light in the effulgent gems that bear the names of Surya, Kanta, etc. So there are some gems. They not just, you know, like if you hold a crystal, there's some crystal. If you shine light on some stones, it will transmit, you know, like, the light passes through the gem, and out from the gem comes some light because there's some light shining on it. That's one kind of gem. Suryakanta is another one that stores, and then it, even without the sunlight, it's shining. Suryakanta. It's a gem that's found in the higher planetary regions, the Suryakanta gem. something like the Shamantaka gem or jewel from the sun god Surya. So it was effulgent because it stored some of the light of the sun. But the light that's from the Shamantaka jewel or the Suryakanta jewel or other similar jewels, they derive the light from the sun. Similarly, Brahma derives his light or derives his power. This Amogha Radhasa from Govinda. And therefore, he's infallible. And specifically what Prabhupada writes in this purport, whatever he wants, not just, you know, this region only, this area of service only, especially, but because he's of that caliber of devotee, he may want something. In this case, he's wanting to restore the body of Hiranyakashipu because his body was practically eaten except for the bones. So he wanted to restore it. And because his Amogha Radhasa, his infallible power, was invested in him by Govinda or Krishna, he was able to do that. And then specifically, also this divyena is another interesting term. Divyena, in the word for word of this verse, which was spiritual, comma, not ordinary. And then in the translation is, he sprinkled transcendental, infallible, spiritual water. Now, Brahma's abode is not transcendental, infallible, and spiritual. It's, you know, temporary like everything else. And it's fallible. And it's not fully spiritual. It comes into being and goes out of being. Yet the water is being described in this way. The water and the power of Brahma. So, that seems like a contradiction. How do we resolve that contradiction? Two possible ways to resolve the contradiction. There's, just like on this planet, there is spiritual water. And it acts in a spiritual way, like the Ganges and the Jamuna, for example. They're spiritual. Now they're on this plane and it's water. It looks like, you know, Chicago River from our inspection. But Chicago River doesn't act like Jamuna or Radhakund water or something. It's different. It acts in a fully spiritual way. And one possible, you know, the descent of the Ganges is throughout the universe, not just here. So a possible indication is that he took some water from there in his Kamandalu, and that's what he sprinkled on Hiranyakashipu. Then there's another possibility, which is equal, and that is just like when we take water from the Chicago River or wherever we get, where is the reservoir of water that comes out of the tap, or take from, you know, the filtered water or, you know, wherever we take water that we offer to the deities, and you offer the water to the deities and then we sprinkle that after offering to the deities. And that's, it acts in a spiritual way. So that which is, it's an important, very important teaching in the science of devotion, the science of bhakti. The chapter 87 of Canto 10 talks about this topic. You ever read that chapter? Pretty puzzling, isn't it? Deep and profound and puzzling. When we had our last, we call it now a midterm meeting. So it was in October, we were in Tirupati. That was the chapter that was being discussed. You know, everyone, all the speakers had to speak from that chapter. My God. Like, very, very elevated subject. The topic is quite simple in principle. The topic is things that are of this world. It's Maharaj Pariksit. I'm just paraphrasing and keeping it really simple. Maharaj Pariksit goes, wow, I'm completely free from any fear of death. Let that snake bird come. He says that several times. But how did that happen? I'm completely absorbed in thought of the Supreme Lord, completely beyond any condition of fear. If you remember from yesterday evening, that one of the characteristics of even sadhana bhakti is that it frees one from material contaminations. Like one of them was kleshagni, fear of death. He was beyond that. Then he asked the question, how did it happen? Because all that happened was something that was material, your tongue was engaged with something material, my ear, and then it happened. So how did it happen? How can something material create something spiritual? That's the question. And then Shukadev Goswami says, fantastic question. This is such an important question. It was discussed long ago by great sages. And then he says, and when those sages were discussing, they refer to a discussion that happened long ago when the four Kumaras were discussing with the personified Vedas, the same question. In other words, it's a good question. It's a classic. And the short answer, it's a long chapter, very, very deep, intricate, puzzling. Everything has its source of emanation. Krishna. And when something is used in service to Krishna, the fundamental spiritual characteristic of that, namely its connection with the source of emanation, is restored. It becomes spiritualized, in other words. Prabhupada's simple example is the iron rod in fire. It becomes like fire, although it's iron. Here, the comparison is being given of wood and fire that's stored in wood, and fire comes out when in touch with fire. So in this case, it's the body of Hiranyakashipu was transformed by this contact with the sprinkled water from the Kamandalu of Lord Brahma. Kamandalu is a water pot. So two features. One is the empowerment, the infallible empowerment of Lord Brahma to do what he wants, specifically in terms of creation, but here in this case also restoring the body of, if he can create a universe and populate in all the varieties of species within the universe, because it's the potency is from him, and then he passes that potency on to others who assist him, he has the potency to restore the body of whoever he wants. And he wanted. And so, because the desire of such an elevated devotee is supported by the will of the Supreme Lord. So the will of the Supreme Lord, he gave this. And then later it happened, going to come, coming attractions is Hiranyakashipu is going to ask for immortality. It's not granted. So then he asked for other things, and it was granted. And the Supreme Lord, one of his qualities is Satya Sara, mentioned in the 11th canto of Bhagavatam, that he is perfectly truthful. He upholds the word of his devotee. That's how truthful he is. So the personality of God had upheld the word of Brahma because Brahma gave his word. And then later in this canto, when Prahlad is installed on the throne, there's this ceremony. Lord Srinidhe pulls Lord Brahma to the side and says, don't do this again. Don't make such promises to demons. Because the Lord will support. So that makes the Amogha Radhasa And then the water, again, either one of these three, from the transcendental origin, the descending Ganges, offering to the Supreme Lord. Or, here's a third possibility. The third possibility, I'm going to make reference to nectar of devotion. And those of you that have studied nectar devotion know that there are 64 qualities of Krishna, and the first 50 of those 64 qualities of Krishna are within the living entity to a small degree. And then the next five are within Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva to a small degree, specifically in Brahma Samhita, on this very verse describing the position of Lord Brahma, is that Lord Shiva has more of those five than Lord Brahma has, and then Lord Vishnu has them in full. And the living entities that are not in the position of Lord Brahma, they don't have those five. So I'm going to read to you those five, and as you hear them, please consider the following question. How is it possible that Lord Brahma, who dies and has a material body, can have these five qualities? And the answer is, they're partial. More so in Lord Shiva, fully in Lord Vishnu. So, 51, changeless. 52, all cognizant. 53, ever fresh. 54, Satchit Ananda Vigraha. 55, possessing all mystic perfections. Well, take any one of them, and Lord Brahma doesn't have that. He doesn't have a Satchit Ananda Vigraha. Doesn't have all mystic perfections. He's not ever fresh. He's not all cognizant. I mean, he knows a lot, but he's not all cognizant. That's super soul. And changeless. He dies. He undergoes, he goes to sleep. He has changes. So the explanation given by our acharyas is partial. Partially Satchitananda. And, you know, some explanation goes like this. Anyway, I won't go into the whole long explanation, but, you know, just one day of Lord Brahma compared to, you know, anything of this world. Who's the next one down from Lord Brahma in the hierarchy? Lord Indra. And Lord Indra, there's an Indra during the span of each Manu, and then there's another Indra and another Indra and another Indra. So think about it, you know, numerically. Even in comparison to Indra, I did the numbers, I'm not good with numbers in my mind. Maybe some people are really good with math in their mind. But the duration of the life of Indra, who is the next one down, is, you know, 71 yuga cycles times 10, and that's just one day. So that's Indra. And then to us, practically speaking, it's interminable, although it terminates. It's something like, from the previous verses, Hiranyakashipu coveted the position of Lord Brahma so that he could be worshipped by all the devas, and then on top of that he wants to be eternal. Of course, as we discussed, the math doesn't work. 2 + 2 = 85. That's not the right math. Because everything of this world is temporal. But Brahma, he has this partial Satchitananda Vigraha, partial all cognizant, partial. So that's another way of perhaps understanding this, the spiritual, transcendental, all-powerful water was partial, like Lord Brahma is partial. In any case, it had the effect of restoring his body. Then the next verse and purport, in the purport, Prabhupada explains how that transformation took place was because of his severe austerity and penance. So it's not that standalone severe austerity and penance can do something. It's not by our effort alone that anything can happen. Were it to be so, we'd be independent. We'd be God. And we're not. It's not by one's effort. So the whole concept of fruitive activities minus, like karma monks of philosophy, just do your duty and everything good will come. You don't have to worry about God. The notion of karma, the monks of philosophy, is there may or may not be. If you take the position there is, well, in any case, the person who dispenses the fruits of your good work is obliged to by the law of karma. And if there isn't a person that dispenses, it's just the law of karma. So you don't need to worship. Just do good work. Just prescribe duty and Hari Bol. It's an atheistic philosophy. So it's not that because of his severe austerity and penance alone it was possible there was some reciprocation. And that's in fact how it happened. Because of his severe austerity and penance, the demigods were intimidated. He wants to create a reversal of the affairs of the natural order of things in the universe. And we're part of that natural order of things in the universe and the arrangement of Lord Vishnu. So because of that severe austerity and penance creating the disturbance, then Lord Brahma came and then... So there's these two things, even for the atheist. There is the dependence upon descending empowerment for his body to be restored. It's not just by his austerity and penance. That may prompt something of a higher order, but the higher order is necessary. Descending mercy is necessary for anything, even for the materialist, for the thief to be able to steal. He's dependent upon super soul. He may not believe in God or whatever. But whoever, Hiranyakashipu, was also deriving his power from Vishnu, as was Prahlad deriving his power from Vishnu. So this descending position is required. So there are statements in Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our Amala Purana, which may appear to support perspectives or points of view or philosophies that are not Vaishnava philosophies in Srimad Bhagavatam. For example, in the churning of the milk ocean. Anyone not familiar with that? The churning of the milk ocean? In the churning of the milk ocean, Leela, this poison is produced. And everyone panics. Ah! So Lord Vishnu goes to Lord Shiva And verse after verse, he's honoring Lord Shiva. So it looks, and you know, in language even that says you are supreme and so forth and so on. So in the purport, verse by verse, purport, Prabhupada writes, this is a nice example of Lord Vishnu saying, the understanding is we should worship Lord Vishnu. The understanding is we should worship Lord Vishnu. That's Prabhupada's rendering. But somebody else would read, just see, this Shiva is supreme. And other things and other things. So now, how are we to understand those things and those other things? And our great Acharya, Jiva Goswami, indicates that anything, all of the Paribhasha Sutra of a scripture is the emperor. And by definition, according to Vedic texts, what a Paribhasha Sutra is, all other, it rules so many other statements and facts that may follow in a text. And to understand anything, it must be consistent with and subordinate to the emperor. Any other understanding is an incorrect understanding and must be rejected. It must be subordinate to and subservient to this Paribhasha Sutra. It rules a whole series of seemingly unrelated facts and events. The unrelated, seemingly unrelated facts are actually to enhance and elucidate the first, the Paribhasha Sutra. And the position of Srimad Bhagavatam is similar in relation to any other literature within the Vedic compilation of literatures, Puranas and otherwise. It rules. So it's like the Supreme Court. There may be some other statements made by some person or another person or a lower court or an appeal court, but the Supreme Court is final, so Srimad Bhagavatam is final. That's our position as followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and taught very meticulously by Jiva Goswami, a meticulous follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So many other things to say, but I think I'll end there and see if there's any comment or question.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, on the same point of Amogha Rajasa.
What's that?
On the same point of Amogha Rajasa.
Okay.
I was wondering, could another possibility be that this is Narada Muni's subjective appreciation of Lord Brahma,
sure,
who is also his spiritual master? Like, in other words, like ontologically, Lord Brahma is in one position, but the vision of the spiritual master will be subjectively seen differently by different types of
individuals. Well, one might think like that. But then the counter to that is Narada Muni himself is a transcendentalist. He's not just, pumped up to exaggerate the position of his spiritual master. He's, one might think like that. One might have that view or argue like that. And the counter is, Narada Muni is not, there's a word for that, just make exaggeration, hyperbole about someone that's inappropriate, just like they're fired up or pumped up about somebody they like or they appreciate or have a high regard for. Such persons as Narada don't speak like that. And Srimad Bhagavatam doesn't address like that. And, our other authoritative literatures have a very clear explanation of some other way by which one can understand what Narada is saying. It's not an inappropriate exaggeration or a non-factual exaggeration. You know, but somebody might speak, there's this other idea. He's just fired up and he has a lot of appreciation, so he's speaking exaggerative words. Go ahead.
Follow up. What constitutes hyperbole? Because when we, for example, in our group puja prayer in the morning, the glories of the spiritual master spread all over the universe may sound like hyperbole to someone who's atheistic in mindset. Or there are many statements even sakshat dari tvena may sound like hyperbole to someone without sufficient faith. So what actually constitutes hyperbole and just a genuine faith-based statement?
Well, it depends on the statement. The scripturally, the fact is, Rabindranath Prabhu gave a whole class and a brilliant class in Gita Nagari on this Sakshad Hari. He focused on the word tva, which means ness or having the quality of, and explained in Sanskrit what does that mean, tva, the having the quality of. So anyone that performs such a function, not just the Diksha Guru, but those who perform the function of Guru of the different categories, there is an empowerment, a tva, a characteristic descending directly from Krishna. Otherwise, they're not, it's illusory. Or, you know, it's false. It's in name only. So there may be degrees like this discussion about, you know, the five characteristics of Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. There may be greater or lesser degrees of tva, sakshad hari tva, ness, of being empowered by hari, sakshad hari. And that's how, it's not an exaggeration or hyperbole, it's how one who is receiving from guru, shiksha guru, diksha guru, they should see there's descending sakshad hari tva within that person. And if they're not seeing like that, then it's a sham. If they're not seeing like that, it's a sham. And if the person is not, in fact, in spirit, to their capacity, representing Hari and the message of disciplic succession, then that's another sham. So the reality is, it's not a hyperbole, it's how the disciple or follower of Guru should see. And there may be a greater or lesser degree. Then another is some of the other verses, you know, the famous spread all over the three worlds, etc. Another one of the classes that the Rabindranath Prabhu gave was explaining Guru is one. You know, that wonderful Vyasa Puja homage that Prabhupada gave to Bhakti Siddhanta, where Guru is one. So it's, again, it's not your spiritual master or his spiritual master, and the fame of that person is spread all over the three worlds. But it's the Guru is one. The principle of, and the various manifestations of that principle is one. And that fame is spread all over the three worlds. Now, to repose, I'm giving not like the definitive answer, I'm giving an answer. One answer. That it's not hyperbole, it's speaking of a principle, and then different personalities who are embodying that principle, their fame may go far beyond, you know, the place where their two feet are standing. in differing degrees, and then ultimately, you know, those who are serving in that capacity, the principle of guru is widespread, and then variously manifested, widespread. That's a way of understanding that particular stance, and so forth. It's a proper regard for the person who is serving in this capacity and carrying out the function. It's not the same as, but it's something similar to when somebody is speaking Srimad Bhagavatam, they are to sit on a seat. That's the seat of Vyas. It's not like, okay, now we're to regard them as Vyas. They're to give respect because they're on behalf of Vyas speaking the message of Vyas, the Vyasasana. And so they're to be regarded in a particular way. Otherwise, you know, the effect of receiving Vyasa's message will be diminished, if not lost. Even the person's, the proper regard needs to go to that person. Not because they're famous, spread all over the three worlds, but they're representing Vyas. And that, so that function is to be properly regarded. And once again, different persons may have different embodiment of that, the fullness of that capacity of speaking on behalf of Vyas. That's a possible explanation. You know, going back to, is Narada speaking of Brahma in this, you know, exaggerated glorification because he's just fired up? He likes Brahma. That's not Narada. Yes.
Just as a follow-up to what he was saying, everything you described about the view of a disciple towards his, excuse me, towards his spiritual master, it seems like, because his question was, how do we determine if something is hyperbole or not? And it seems like the way
that's his question. That was his question. Following on his question.
I'm following up on his question. And the way you explained these statements in our songs, in our scriptures.
There may be other explanations, by the way.
Sure, sure. There may be other explanations. Then is it really, can we say that Narada's appreciation of his spiritual master was an exaggeration, or rather it was just the faithful view of a disciple? As you were saying, the disciple should view that the spiritual master, the principle within the spiritual master, is spread all over the world. Then perhaps Narada is also seeing the principle within his spiritual master, that empower potency and gives him this vision that my spiritual master's power is.
Remember to
Amoga.
Speak slowly. You do very nicely at the beginning of the sentence.
And I forget.
And then we get the end of the sentence going real fast. I can't catch everything.
So.
Please help me.
I will go back to this.
No, I got it so far.
Okay.
So now the punchline is?
So, can we say that Narada's statement was, exaggerated?
You can say that.
Or
I already confirmed. You can say, someone can say that. I would disagree.
But that, I don't think that's what he's saying. I don't think he's saying that Narada's statement was an exaggeration.
I don't think he's saying that either. Uh-huh. And if someone were to say that, I would disagree for the reasons given. Now, what's your question?
Okay, got it. That's it.
Okay. Someone else. Jagatananda.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this question is about empowerment.
Empowerment.
So here in the Purport, Prabhupada writes, Lord Brahma being especially empowered, he was infallible in doing whatever he wants. So, each of us, the devotees, we are empowered. We are empowered to some extent.
Yeah, we're all empowered to some extent.
So, what are the qualities of becoming especially empowered?
What are the qualities?
Yeah, that are required bhakti. From our side.
Bhakti.
Okay. And then here, can especially empowered also mean, here it says that he could do whatever he wants, but can it mean that he's especially, one is especially empowered to do one thing, or can be especially empowered to do many things?
Either. In other words, if Krishna is not obliged, if Krishna doesn't want to empower something, he doesn't empower something.
And then another so follow-up.
You may want to go to Govardhan and, you know, lift Govardhan Hill in service to Krishna. But you may not be able to lift Govardhan Hill. So Krishna isn't obliged to empower everything that somebody wants. Yeah. Or Lord Brahma. He's not obliged to empower everything that, but, you know, the qualification, again, is bhakti. So one wants to do in service to Krishna. Okay.
Okay, and then, so I think you already answered it when you said the answer is bhakti. So is it a natural progression? I mean, the empowerment becomes, I mean, can increase as one's bhakti unfolds?
And don't forget, you have the disposition of Krishna.
Yeah.
Let's say, it's not that our previous acharyas, or let's even go make it shorter. It's not that Bhaktisiddhanta didn't want Krishna consciousness to spread all over the world. Not that Bhaktivinoda Thakur didn't want Krishna consciousness to spread all over the world. On one morning walk, maybe you've heard this before, but in one morning walk I was with Srila Prabhupada, and the whole morning he was just on a roll about Bhaktivinoda Thakur, this and that, and this and that, and his cane was going in the air, and he was so enlivened about Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and then a little pause, and someone said, Prabhupada, why didn't Bhaktivinoda Thakur spread Krishna consciousness all over the world? And Prabhupada turned to them and said, he left something for us to do. Or Krishna left something for us to do. Or, you know, it's not Krishna's obliged because are we going to say Bhaktivinoda Thakur wasn't a pure devotee or Bhaktisiddhanta wasn't a pure devotee? He didn't have sufficient bhakti. We're not going to say that. So it's not the Lord is obliged. But so there's a qualification necessary. Bhakti. And then the dispensation of the Lord. So just like we may want to do something that's not, you know, something more modest. And, you know, there's these two main factors. Mercy and effort. And the purity of the purpose behind the effort. Is that right?
Especially empowered can also mean, you know, qualitatively doing one thing, or it could mean both qualitatively and quantitatively, depending on what Krishna wants us to do.
I'm not sure what you're asking. Qualitative, quantitative? What are you asking?
No, I'm saying, so qualitatively empowered to do one thing in a qualitative way, like going deeper into one's...
Krishna's independent. He can do what he wants. You're empowered to something and not something else. If Krishna wants, he can do that, sure. Is that your question?
Yes, Maharaj. Okay. It can be one or many or all. Yeah.
Sure, Krishna can do what he likes.
Thank you.
I mean, again, just because I'm spending time with Tathasandarbha and Jiva Goswami's life, there's such appreciation of the range and the depth of what he was qualified to do. And even within any one of those things that he was so incredibly qualified to do, there's huge range and depth in each one of them. Incredible. Incredible. So it's not to say somebody else is lesser because they weren't empowered in those ways with range and depth, or breadth and depth. But he was. So it's some special appreciation. So Krishna may decorate somebody somebody. And we appreciate their devotion and how Krishna has decorated them. Jitendra.
Maybe in this regards, the term first deserve, then desire. So we should deserve before we can maybe desire to do some lofty things.
Well, we may flip it. Part of the thing that may help us be deserving is desiring. I'm just having a dialogue here. So let's say I would like to be a better instrument of Srila Prabhupada to make Krishna consciousness manifest to the Western audience. Like, you just take that little piece. I'm not qualified. But having the desire to do that may give me impetus to become qualified so that I can be the better instrument. What do you think?
So we should deserve, well, we can desire after we become purified.
Sure.
We have to come to that level.
Sure.
Thank you.
Sure. Anything else? Okay, so the Prabhupada ki jai.